Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world views and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And then came Angola. And a lot of Soviet Union intrusions plus Cuban adventurism to the tune of about 12,000 or more armed troops to help black fighting black in a nation where the whites had already decided to get out. And so the communists are now expanding a global colonial empire. And they are a white regime. But the United States wants to feel righteous. And in an election year, I suppose, a certain amount of political overtones may be felt in statements made by the administration, which, when you look at what is happening currently in television and entertainment, some of the absolutely inflammatory types of things which are being shown to the American populace, of the hideous mistreatment of blacks in our own history, when you look at race problems, tension, open violence, confrontations, the possibility of riot and bloodshed in Boston, as you look at busing and anti-busing demonstrations, you have to wonder whether or not some of the statements being made by the United States of America, a country born about 200 years ago in revolution, a tiny little struggling group of colonists, as it were, who, so far as anyone may have known, if there had been any census taking available, represented a white minority government in a continent peopled by tens of thousands of dark, swarthy aboriginals on the North American continent who were called mistakenly Indians. I suppose if Dr. Kissinger had been a Secretary of State under old King George, he would have been calling for an end to that white minority government. And shortly after the successful revolution of 1776, he would have tried to get all the other European powers, and it might have been quite different if instead of coming to our aid, the nation of France had joined in with Britain with sanctions against the white minority regime of the 13 colonies and instead insisted upon one man, one vote. Wouldn't that have been interesting if they'd rewritten history that way? Now, so far as the Indian tribes of the plains and of the Western United States, and all the rest of it for that matter, I suppose if you go back and turn history back, there would be a lot of people around to say, yes, amen, that's the way to go. Well, unfortunately, there's no reason to argue that one way or the other because it didn't go that way, but you have to look at some of the statements coming to the fore today with the whole overview of world conditions, with the United Nations, with the posture and the place of the United States toward the United Nations and the Afro-Asian bloc, and realize that these many black African countries, now being groomed, coddled, and given the long stroke by the Secretary of State of the United States of America, are those same nations who voted in the United Nations to condemn Zionism as a form of racism. And they are the very same peoples who have repeatedly and continuously voted against the United States of America in practically every resolution to come before the United Nations in which the United States had a stake or a part. But why all this self-righteousness? Is it just a desire of the administration that if we could just tidy up Africa by getting the last of the white minority governments out of power, that then we would be satisfied, everything would be wonderful, and for the great mass of Africans, independence, uhuru, freedom, it would all be there. Well, in theory, I suppose to many people that sounds good. But in practice, how has it worked? The impending bloody struggle for control of Rhodesia must be a little bit fearsome to the four, five, six, seven generation whites living in the area who were there first. Oh, you didn't know that? Well, that just happens to be historical fact that those people under Cecil Rhodes, whose name was given to that colony, a visionary who believed in equal rights for all civilized men, by the way, and those people who went up into that country, the Boers, the Dutch, and the British descendants of early immigrants who then put down roots and began to farm and began to raise cattle and began to do business with foreign governments in the export of some of the vital and strategic raw materials as well as some of the world's greatest resources in diamonds and gold, the natural wealth of the world, they were there first. Those white settlers came into an area that was completely unpopulated. They were in the majority then. Remember that movie several years ago? I've forgotten the name of it now. It was one of the bloodiest movies that they'd ever put out. It was about some of the great waves of migrating blacks who were pushed into southern Africa by other black tribes and by Arabs to the north. And there was a massive migratory wave of the unsettlement of many tens of thousands of black people who began to drift south out of the East African highlands in those years, even after the whites were already firmly entrenched in South Africa. And some of those bloody battles that followed were the result of that massive wave of migratory blacks that were descending upon southern Africa at that time, after it had been colonized. Now, I know that the average person who doesn't study, doesn't know, hasn't been there, hasn't traveled, is only willing to see what is happening in Africa as a kind of a white versus black struggle, which is ridiculous on its face, as I will prove to you in a few moments. Is liable to be brainwashed to believe that here descended a group of white colonists. They found all of these multiple millions of peaceful blacks, went in there, exploited them, made slaves out of them, done all these horrible things to them, and are now ruling over them with an iron fist of some sort. Now, for me to say there are not inequalities, for me to say there is not apartheid, for me to say that there is neither the right kind nor the extensive education required nor equal wages would be ridiculous, because all those things do happen, and there are abuses. But the point, I think, historically must be made that the whites were there first. Now, in Rhodesia today, there are hundreds of thousands of white people who represent generation after generation after generation of citizens who have lived in that land, and that is their country. It is their country as much as the United States of America was Benjamin Franklin's country. It is their country as much as Pennsylvania was named after William Penn. And when you see the names of the settlers, and you see the various towns up and down the length and breadth of the nation called Rhodesia after its founder, Cecil Rhodes, you have to realize you are speaking of people who were there for generation after generation after generation. A nation that was born finally as an independent nation by a unilateral declaration of independence from the nation of Britain. A nation of whites who gained control, began to develop, and also to become one of the major exporters of one of the world's most precious and important metals, which the United States hypocritically has been buying undercover behind the sanctions. Because, you see, we must. Because practically all of the world's known reserves of chromium are in the nation of Rhodesia. And metallurgically, it's the best chromium. We have one tiny mine up in Montana, which is probably not even economically feasible to operate. And there are certain reserves in the Soviet Union, but not the same caliber or quality, and certainly not in the same amount. So hypocritically, we have been, of course, importing Rhodesian chromium. We have approximately 1 year's supply on hand. I don't know whether Dr. Kissinger is depending upon whatever black African rule may eventually replace the Ian Smith regime in Rhodesia to do business with the United States, and feels that there is a guarantee that we can depend upon that in the future for the vital industries in the United States of the entirety of our jet, space, materials, of surgical implements, of all of the modern kitchen equipment that we make. In other words, stainless steel. About 11% of all stainless steel has to come from chromium. And chromium has to come from Rhodesia, and we've been getting it from Rhodesia. Where are we going to get it when Rhodesia goes down the drain? Well, I guess somehow the administration may have thought of all of that. So now, in an official speech in an African tour through country after country, the United States Secretary of State has pledged unrelenting opposition to the white minority regime in Rhodesia until black majority rule is achieved. He said in a speech with Zambian President Kenneth Luanda, or Kuanda rather, the same man who told President Ford that the United States ought to be the vanguard of a democratic revolution in southern Africa, And Secretary of State Kissinger told that gentleman here recently that the United States supported in the strongest terms the British proposal for negotiations leading to black majority rule within 2 years. And, of course, millions of Americans, not understanding what is happening, not really knowing the background of it, don't seem to realize that one of the major factors in African politics is, one, tribalism. That means, in other words, racism. And I'm talking about black against black. The devastating, bloody civil war in Nigeria was a war that waged back and forth the length and breadth of that country and took uncounted hundreds of thousands of lives. And it was a war between the Igbos and the Hausas, both black, and neither you nor I could tell them apart. Unless some specialist came along and pointed out they may be wearing different type of tribal marks on their faces or their clothing. It was a struggle for the control and the possession of a government on the part of one tribe against another. In country after country in Africa, tribalism, meaning racism, meaning black against black, and that is precisely what caused the migratory wave of blacks to descend upon Rhodesia and South Africa in the first place, because they were driven out of Central Africa and the East African highlands by their black brethren. So the impending bloody struggle for control of Rhodesia is being billed in most people's ideas and minds, and in a lot of the press that you read and some of the political cartoonery of the day, as a racial confrontation between the 278,000 white people and the 6-plus million black people. Well, let's take a look. Freedom House, a New York-based nonpartisan organization that each year makes a survey of freedom in nations around the world. They survey 158 separate nations around the world every year, kind of make a survey of how freedom is doing in the world. And they place Rhodesia as either as good or better than 77 other countries in the world when it comes to freedom and equal rights for its citizens. 36 of those 77 countries, topped by Rhodesia, by this nonpartisan New York-based organization merely assessing freedom around the world, 36 of those countries are on the continent of Africa. Now, when it comes to civil rights, Rhodesia rates even higher, coming out as good or better than 83 other nations, including 36 of its own neighbors. So Rhodesia falls just about in the middle on a global scale in the countries of the world when it comes to freedom. But you see, for a great mass of Africans in country after country after country, including Rwanda, Burundi, Kenya, Uganda, Zaire, Zambia, Namibia, of recent date, Angola, Cameroon, Nigeria, Upper Volta, Ghana, Senegal, Mauritania, Niger, Chad, Sudan, Ethiopia, you can list them all, then the realization of the dream of Uhuru, or of freedom, liberty, has only meant leaping out of the arms of one taskmaster into the arms of a worse one, substituting the old masters for the new. Since 1951, in this era when the world has gone along with the subtle pressure from the Soviet Union and other countries at large in the world against colonialism, while they covertly were beginning to build what amounts to a colonial empire of their own, in the dismantlement of empire, in the rejection of colonialism by the British, the Belgians, by the Portuguese, by the Americans, by other countries, the Dutch, who have divested themselves of their colonies, their protectorates, who, with nation after nation after nation, in Rhodesia, Southeastern Asia, all around the world, in Central and South America, where the British, the Dutch, and others have had possessions, where country after country has been given Uhuru, independence, freedom. Since 1951, in Africa alone, there have been 44 nations that have achieved independence. In almost every one of those countries, there is no such thing as democracy as you and I know it. In country after country, there is one man, one vote, but only a tiny little infinitesimal handful vote, because they don't know what a vote is in the broad majority of cases, because of vast illiteracy, because the majority of the population are living out on the plains, the veldt, or in the jungles, or elsewhere, and because they're engaged in cattle raising and agricultural pursuits, or in mining, or something of that nature. And so you have minority government, and those very, very few literate and educated ones who even know what a vote is, vote for a single-party system which perpetuates a dictator in power. And out of those 44 nations having achieved independence since 1951, 23 of them have had their governments overthrown at least once by their armies, on some occasions. As a matter of fact, one of the most outstanding of all was the case where a general had to take practically every officer all the way down to about colonel in his entire army with him to a meeting at Addis Ababa for the Organization of African States because he couldn't trust a one of them not to overthrow his regime while he was gone. So the way these people make sure they can still be in power when they get back is to drag everybody practically to the rank of corporal with them aboard a whole fleet of aircraft to take them so they know exactly where they are and they keep their eye on them. Well, you have to look at what really is happening in Africa, because what is happening in Africa is the emergence of one despotic, autocratic dictatorship after another. And the people, always the people, are the ones who suffer. The hapless, abjectly poverty-stricken, disease-ridden, third-world people of the nations of Africa are not being served by most of those so-called democratic governments where only 32 of them are civilian-run, but 29 out of 32 of those are one-party states, where there is no such thing as a two-party system or democracy as we know it. 3 out of 4 Africans live under authoritarian dictatorships. Why is the Secretary of State of the United States of America in such an all-fired hurry to ensure that the last little bit of the tip of Southern Africa goes the way of all the rest? And I have it from inside information that it just may well be the United States of America may find itself forcing the regimes of Southern Africa into the hands and the arms of other vast white races in the other part of the world. As completely unpalatable and as hideous as that may appear to those minority governments, as they are always called, but you need to understand that term because Egypt is a minority government. Namibia, Angola, Tanzania, Zaire, Rwanda, Kenya, Ethiopia are all minority governments. So is Gabon, Cameroon, Central African Republic, and Niger. They're all minority governments. Because only a tiny minority of them are educated. Only a minority are wealthy. Only a minority are in control of the power of the country. Not a majority, but a minority. It's just so pitiful that the average person is so swayed by what he reads in a liberal press oftentimes that he simply assumes that what he is seeing in Africa is a struggle between black and white, and it is nothing of the kind. In Mozambique, the base from which most of the anti-Rhodesian government guerrillas operate, you take a look at Mozambique, and what do you see? Is that what people want? So we can feel all tidied up there. We took care of Africa. We in the United States got Africa out of our hair. Now, we can tell the people who are against the busing in Boston or the people who are for the busing in Boston, we made our statements. We told that Ian Smith where to get off. We told all those hundreds of thousands of whites that have been there for 6, 8, 10 generations that they deserve to die or they deserve to get out, be kicked out, go back where they came from. There, that took care of that. Now, we've tidied Africa up. Now we can have peace here at home. You wonder what in the world the thinking is. In Mozambique, where the guerrillas came from that machine gunned those people to death the other day on motorcycles riding along enjoying a Sunday afternoon in Rhodesia, Mozambique happens to be a Marxist state that has confiscated all private property and confined thousands of its citizens to concentration camps. And they're on the border of Rhodesia, and they're at war against Rhodesia. And the United States Secretary of State is giving a great deal of encouragement to these people. Now, he isn't promising direct military aid, but when he comes out so strongly in the strongest statement of ever in history, the strongest declaration of psychological, of economic, and of diplomatic warfare against the white regime in Rhodesia, the strongest American statement ever made against the government of Ian Smith in Rhodesia so far, made just recently. When the United States pledges unrelenting opposition, then suddenly the United States is getting behind the guerrilla movements coming from the Marxist state of Mozambique, getting behind the guerrilla movements. And let me tell you something. I got a book that shows it, and it shows the pictures from on the spot, and I've talked to the leadership down there. Do you know who usually is butchered? It's not always just a few whites. Because most of the casualties in the long, long, unrelenting guerrilla warfare along the Rhodesian border have been hapless blacks, and a very unbelievable disproportionate percentage of them have been women and children. And I've got the pictures of the poor little black, headless, dismembered, legless bodies lying on a sun-baked village street, hacked to bits by the machetes of other blacks, who were told, get in there and kill somebody. And the people they killed were their own kind. Now, if I sound like I'm a little irritated about the situation developing in southern Africa, you assess the feeling correctly. Even where civilian government has survived in Africa, which is a rarity, only somebody who is either out of his tree or blind could begin to pretend that any such civilian governments bear any remote resemblance to democracy. I'd like to wonder what in the world the present administration wants out of Africa. We've got one dictatorship after another there. They are almost always unitedly opposed to the United States of America. They leap into the arms of the communists. They vote against us in the United Nations. They call Zionism a form of racism. Henry Kissinger happens to be a Jew, by the way. And at the same time, the Secretary of State is over here making these threatening statements, a virtual declaration of diplomatic, psychological, and economic warfare against a white minority regime which knew the birth of its independence in the same precise manner as did the United States of America. Well, maybe you can figure it out, but I can't. Now, wait a minute, because people are going to say, aha, Armstrong is in favor of all of these people in South Africa keeping all those blacks beneath the grinding heel of those few whites. Don't be deceived into believing the problems in Rhodesia are simply those of white versus black. If you really would look at the picture of education in Rhodesia, at what the government has tried to do, at the refusal on the part of millions of blacks to be educated, at the grinding, hideous problem it would be, which would take at least 50 years and about 50 times the tax base, 100 times, 1,000 times the tax base that is presently available. Now, just one minute before you get too excited about it. It just so happens that many big U.S. cities have experienced the same thing. There has been the flight of whites to the suburbs, leaving underprivileged, oftentimes unemployed people inside